Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to the world's longest running football fans podcast from CelticUnderground.net. You take yourself too seriously. Why don't you just relax for a while? How are you doing? This is the world's longest running football fans podcast, as we often say, and it's our 10th anniversary years. And how are you doing after yesterday? Pretty crap, wasn't it? So we're going to have a podcast where St. Anthony and I discuss it. We get a bit heated when we talk about formations and what we should do, and then the obvious conversation we go on to the manager, because of course Celtic managers aren't allowed to lose any games. We also touch on the transfer window and whether it's been good, bad, indifferent or whatever. The one thing I would say about yesterday is it could be worse. You could be a Hun. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, chatting to him, St. Anthony. So I'm joined by St. Anthony. So on this, the day after the day before, how are you feeling today?
Still awfully disappointed, Harry. It's after the great start we made in the first minute, I don't think anybody could have foresaw how badly we were going to fall away. And just absolutely collapse.
Well, we'll start, may as well start at the very beginning. So what was your thoughts on the team? First of all, I'll remind everybody listening that the team was Gordon Lustig, Ambrose Boyata, Tierney, Beaton Johansson, Mackay Stephen, McGregor, Armstrong Griffiths. So what were your thoughts when you saw the team?
First thing that sprang to mind was I wasn't too convinced by the pairing of Boyata and Ambrose at the back, neither of whom I rate individually, and I certainly don't rate them as a partnership. And I had my worries at that point. But he stuck to the team by and large, apart from Simunovic, who was injured, who had served him well in the last four games or so.
Yeah.
So I don't think there was any great surprises. I don't think team selection was particularly the issue.
So then, on the way to the game, my brother and I were discussing, which is something I'll maybe return to later in the podcast, we were just discussing over the last 10 years maybe, how few times we've turned up at Hampden and gone away thinking we played really well and that game was dead comfortable.
I wonder if it's something to do with the atmosphere at Hampden. You know, you're a wee bit further away for the pitch. Certainly behind the goals, there's a distance from the field of play. And I don't know if it's maybe because the place is half empty or I don't know if the dimension of Hampden are any different. You'd always say, you know, traditionally we always thought it was a very big field,
yeah,
a big playing surface. So I don't know what it is, but I don't know as well as if, especially with the League Cup, whether it's a lack of motivation with the players. Because certainly in the league games, I don't think you can criticise them recently or throughout the course of the season. There's been a few bad games along the way, but generally speaking, they've all played well. But when we get to Hampden, I mean, that's about six fairly embarrassing, maybe very embarrassing defeats in the last 6 years. Very disappointing.
Well, and just something you touched on there, because you and I went through a period in our lives where in particular, the League Cup was a competition that just everybody could win bar us.
Yeah. That's true. That was a period between 82 and 97. I think it was a 15-year period that we didn't lift at once. And, you know, it was a frustrating competition, but I can't get my head around. It's not just the League Cup. There's been a few nightmares in the Scottish Cup as well. And you can see fate plays a wee part in it, because along the way, there's been a few contentious decisions, but I mean overall it's been poor performances that have cost us.
Yeah, and the reason why I mention about over the last 10 years Because this is something that sometimes go back to. That's under Lennon, under Mowbray, yeah, under Strachan. Yeah. It's not a one manager, you know. It's
no. I mean, you certainly can't really blame it on Ronnie Dore for the overall performances, but he has been responsible for a couple himself. He has to maybe take a wee bit of responsibility.
Yeah, I'm not trying to absolve. I'm just commenting the peculiar element of different managers, different players, but it's the same thing. Anyway, so we then score inside the first minute. What were you thinking?
What a start. I mean, it was a great goal. McGregor put a lovely ball through to Griffiths, who did be able to stay onside, and he was very unselfish in teeing up Mackay Stephen. And from memory, I think we nearly got a second one as well. And everything was looking rosy at that point. So it was before the roof caved in.
Right, so I was in the... Talking about the roof caving in, I was in the south stand, row H. So people who know Hampden will know that the south and north stands have marginally better views than the east and west stands. And so it's in the south stand, row H. The thing about that is it sort of cambers up quite gradually so that when you're in the single letter rows, you feel reasonably close to the pitch and quite low down, and then you get to the double letter rows and you feel a million miles away from the pitch because suddenly you've gone back. So I was dead in line with the penalty, and in row H I felt I was quite close to pitch level. So what were your thoughts of the penalty?
Their penalty?
Mm-hmm. First of all, before that, the foul on Griffiths for our penalty claim.
Yeah, but well, the I was behind the goal in the Celtic end and fairly low down, not the best I've used, to be honest. So when the ball get played through, I couldn't really comment yesterday on Twitter because my view was obstructed slightly. And I watched it on TV last night, and I actually think Ambrose, for all his faults, was very unlucky. I don't think he was clumsy. I just think he actually tried to get out of the way of the guy. And in an effort to get out of the way of him, he slightly clipped him, just maybe in his mid-thigh, and it's been enough to send the guy down. And the irony is that the boy knocked it too far in front. There was no way he was going to score, because Gordon had it covered, and in the greasy surface, the ball had run away from him. And then the only thing you can argue at that point is a stonewall penalty, and is it a sending-off? And I have to say that in my eyes, it is a sending off, because if it happened up the other end of there, I'd have been screaming for one of their players to be sent off.
Well, from my point of view, when Craig Thompson blew, my first reaction was he was actually giving a foul to Celtic because the player had gone in two-footed on Craig Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
It was right in I didn't see the foul, and I mean, when I then watched it on the television, the mistake from Ambrose is letting the ball go through. I then, like you, think he was very unlucky. Actually, I've not watched it. I only watched it on the telly in the south stand at half time. And the reaction of everybody around me watching, there was one angle in particular, was the Ross County player dived down.
It wasn't a dive. There was definitely contact there. And enough to send them. I mean, in the great scheme of Ambrose blunders, I don't think that's the worst thing he's ever done. I think in this case he's been genuinely unlucky. But there's no doubt it's a penalty kick. I mean, that's... You know, I saw... I was a bit of a masochist last night because I stayed up and watched Sportsy, and I watched it from every angle, and it's a definite penalty for me.
So then we had something that I didn't realise until I saw the stats today. My brother and I turned to each other and said, they'll score, because I've never seen Craig Gordon look even close to saving a penalty.
Uh-huh.
I've now discovered that in his career, Craig Gordon has had 38 penalties in outfield play.
Mm-hmm.
One has hit the post.
Mm-hmm.
One's been ballooned over the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, two have been ballooned over the bar. And 35 have gone in the back of the net.
I saw that on Twitter today, and I was surprised to see the least. So much so that I thought, maybe somebody's at it, you know, maybe having a wee, poking a wee bit of fun at it. But, you know, by all accounts, that's the case. And
well, somebody sent me a link, because I was the same as you. Somebody sent me a link to transfermarket.co.uk, Craig Gordon stats. And the three penalties not scored against him were the one in the League Cup last season, the Hearts guy hit it over the bar.
Yeah.
The Jimmy Boulard hitting the post and a Middlesbrough guy hitting it over the bar, and the other 35 are goals.
Well, that's a shocking statistic for the point of view. You know, you think a goalkeeper would maybe save 1 in 10, you know, hopefully save 1 in 10. Or maybe even 1 in 5.
Well, I mean, just, you would like to think, just from odds of picking the right way by chance. You're going to save one.
I mean, the law of averages surely states you should get one now and again. That's pretty poor 30 bonus. I'm surprised at that.
So, goal goes in, Effie has to go. The one thing I agree with you, if it's a penalty, Effie Ambrose absolutely has to go.
Yeah.
So, ball goes in the back of the net. Substitutions need to be made. You sent me a text and said you think the manager should have gone for it and put to three at the back. So explain what you would have done when Ambrose gets sent off.
Well, here's my rationale. Okay, now imagine you were interviewing for a manager, right?
Uh-huh.
Whether it's Celtic or anybody else, and you say, here's a wee scenario. You're 1-0 up, and the other team gets a penalty and you get a player sent off, and the other team equalise. So you're now down to 10 men in a cup semi-final. What do you do? And my answer to that question would be, doing nothing is not an option. And that's what Ronnie did yesterday. He just sat in his hands. Granted that he brought on, he took off McGregor and
so
brought on.
So apart from doing something, he did nothing?
No, he didn't change the shape of the team. That's what I'm saying. Rather than playing a 4...
Anybody can do something. So when you're saying do something, what do you mean by do something?
Right, what I would have done is, and everybody, listen, I'm not saying, I'm only throwing my thumbs up in here. Everybody's got their own opinion and their own alternate way of doing things. So what I would have done at that point was, I would have took Lustig across from the right back position, mm-hmm. and played three centre backs, a tight three.
So what would your three have been?
That would have been Lustig, Boyata, and what's the new guy? How do you pronounce
the
it?
The Danish guy.
is it Shevchenko? That's not his name, is it?
Shevchenko,
right. So there's your three for a start in the centre. I would have brought James Forrest on, and I would have played for either Armstrong or Mackay Stephen.
But who are you taking off for Shevchenko?
Well, McGregor's off at that point, isn't he?
So you make two substitutions 15 minutes into the game.
Yeah, listen to what I'm saying here.
No, I'm listening. I'm making sure I get it right. So 14 minutes into the game, you make two of the three substitutions you've got.
You're down to 10 men in a semi-final. You may as well twist rather than stick, right?
Right, so you take two off, okay? So you take McGregor off?
So you would have Forrest in the right flank, and you would basically say to him, you're a wing-back. You're not a full-back, you're a wing-back. You tuck in and defend when we need it, but you also attack when we can.
So pretty much what Lustig does week in, week out.
No, Lustig's not getting the pace. The legs have gone, Brian.
Aye, the legs have gone. That would be why he put so many crosses in for the goals in the last two games before he scored 12 goals.
Watching Lustig run sometimes is watching somebody run in treacle. He just has,
No, but the point I'm making is, we play with two wing-backs already.
Mm-hmm.
We play with two
wing-backs. No, we're not playing the wing-backs, we're playing the full-backs.
No, we don't play with full-backs. If there's a criticism of Ronnie's system,
mm-hmm.
it's that we play with two wing-backs, but only two centre-halves, and so the two centre-halves are very exposed at times.
Constantly exposed.
Yeah, so we already play with two wing-backs. So you move Lustig back, and then you put Forrest where Lustig plays, okay?
Yep.
And then you keep Tierney where he normally plays.
No, you say to Tierney that you're essentially not a left back at that point. You're expected to push forward a wee bit more.
So he does his normal job?
No.
I'm sorry. I go and watch a team called Celtic. There's a young guy called Tierney. He plays as a left wing back position.
Mm-hmm. No, he's a full back. He's not a wing back.
Oh, come on.
Brian, what does Ronnie play with? A back four or a back two?
A back two, principally. That's what we've just established as the criticism of him. His two full backs play as wing
backs. It's a 4-3-1-2.
Saint, here's the difficulty I've got having this conversation. I watch the team on the park. I don't sit and watch a set of numbers on. The formation's irrelevant. It's what we actually do. It's not what you call what we do. It's what we actually do. We play with two wing-backs. Anybody who thinks we don't can't understand football. We play with two wing-backs. We do not play with full-backs. That is the criticism. That is the reason why our defence looks so poor this season. Because we play with two wing-backs. We effectively play our fullbacks the way fullbacks would play, the way wingbacks play in a 3-5-2, except we don't have the middle of the three centre halves. So the reason why our defences look so poor this season is because we play with two centre halves who play the system that you would have if you played with three centre halves in a 3-5-2, and they've been overexposed. I mean, you just needed to see even St Johnstone at times were causing us problems because they had 3-on-2 because we play with two centre-halves who are spread right out. So Tierney, our full-backs do far more attacking than they ever do defending. They're much more in the opposition half, so that they are wing-backs. We play with wing-backs.
Nah, I'm not having that. They're full-backs. They start the game as full-backs. Although they are attacking full-backs.
Right, straw prolongs to anybody. You can go on Twitter after listening to the podcast. Yes, I watched the Celtic play. And we play with fullbacks. Yes, I watch Celtic play, but I don't get football, so I call them fullbacks. Just because people say we've got a four at the back, we're not playing with four.
Listen, you were asking me there what I would have done, right?
I would have had three centre backs in a wing back position. Okay, yep.
Three centre backs. I would have two wing backs.
Yep.
And then I would have said to Armstrong, I'd have taken McKay Stephen off for Forrest, and I would have said to Armstrong, "You're right behind Griffith, so that when we attack, you need to make sure that you're supporting Griffith to try and give us another forward, and say to him also that we're down to 10 men, therefore you've got to do a lot of running. We defend, you defend, but when we get the ball
do you have like a timeout system to do this? To give all these instructions to the players?
The professional players, I mean, I'll give you an example. Dan Petrescu came to Ibrox about 5 years ago. And I can't even remember the name of the team, right? The remaining champions. They were 1-0 done after 10 minutes, and a Rangers supporter in my work says, Petrescu came to the side, he called his two or three of his team over, and he started pointing and holding up his fingers at fours and threes and twos. He changed the whole shape of his team, but he was 1-0 done after 10 minutes, and he was 4-1 up at half-time. Because there are managers out there who have got tactical nous, who can change tactics when the occasion arises and they can make a difference. And I'm sorry, we don't have a manager that can do that.
You see, so you would have...
Well, let me throw one at you then.
Let me finish your team.
Took over, that he has tactically made a change when they're getting beat with combining one a game.
So you wouldn't count going 4-1-4-1 against Ajax and changing that to 4-1-4-1. That's you're not counting that one. At home. We started the game 4-4-1-1 and then changed it to 4-1-4-1. There was the game, can't remember who we were playing.
But against Ajax, that's the point I'm making.
He still changed the game. One of my bugbears was when people say Ronnie's got no plan B. Well, I actually can remember reading or hearing Celtic fans bemoaning that Martin O'Neill had no plan B and that Gordon Strachan had no plan B. Principally because managers train the players to play a certain way, week in, week out. And so you don't really want to be changing things dramatically in the middle of a game and moving things around. You know, you suddenly say, right, okay, 14 minutes into the game, we've had one player sent off. We are now going to shift from our current defensive system into a system that we've never practiced and never played before, with three at the back.
Forrest, you're going to play wing-back that you've never played before. Armstrong, I want you to come over and have a conversation about the fact that you're playing in midfield and up front at the same time. You're going to have to run about a bit. And I know it's a position you've never played before. You're going to make all of those changes mid-game, 14 minutes into a game.
My point to you was not to do anything yesterday wasn't an option, and that's why we ended up losing.
You said if I was interviewing a manager and I said you're 1-0 up in a cup game and you get a player sent off and you lose a penalty and lose the goal, what would I want a manager to do straight after that? Consolidate, settle down, and take the sting out of the opposition who's suddenly been given a bit of life. I don't do anything stupid. Make it nice and solid for 15, 20 minutes. That's actually what I would want a manager to do, not to rip up everything, change five players on the park, make two of my three substitutions inside 15 minutes, have people playing in a position they've never played before, and play a system we've never played before.
I need to tell you one thing. Armstrong was a central midfield, attacking midfielder at Dundee United.
You just said that you wanted to play up. You said you wanted him to play up alongside Griffiths.
No, not alongside him. What I said was the onus would be in him to be the attacking midfielder.
So he's sitting behind Griffiths as the number 10. Right. So watch him. So then you've got who in midfield?
You've got four across the midfield. You've got Forrest on the right. You've got Beaton, Johansson and Tierney on the left. And then you've got the three centre-backs behind you.
I thought Forrest and Tierney were wing-backs.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, is that they would be in the middle of the party. You wouldn't expect them to be orthodox full-backs. You would expect them to be further up.
Well, are they wing-backs, full-backs or midfielders?
Wing-backs are midfielders, Brian. They're wide midfielders.
They're wingers. They're wing-backs.
No, they're not.
The wing-backs are wing-backs. They're not midfielders.
No.
They're a different position.
A wing-back is essentially a wide midfielder. When Didi Agar played for Celtic and he played on the right-hand side, he was in the far right of the five-man midfield. He was a wing-back.
Wasn't a wing-back then?
No, you're actually confusing me now. He was the wide man expected to get up and down the flank, just the same way as Thompson or Bobby Petter did in the left.
No, Thompson and Bobby Petter are very different types of players.
Yeah, I know, but they still filled in the same role.
No, they did. They're different types of players, so they do it differently.
They're different styles, but they're performing the same role.
Are Tierney and Forrest holding? Are we sitting with a flat four to be a bit more defensive with Armstrong? So effectively going 3-4-1-1, or are we having two midfielders and two wing backs?
What would have happened was Forrest would have been on the right hand side of the midfield.
So you'd be a midfielder?
Right, no. But call him a full back, a wing back, a midfielder. He would have the responsibility for getting up and down the right flank.
So he's a wing back?
Just the same way as Tierney would have the responsibility to get up and down the left flank.
So he's a wing. So two wing backs. We'd have been completely overrun in midfield. Because
But you know something, that might be more exciting than getting beat 3-1. The point that you made there about Martin O'Neill is
because they played 4-5-1 to try and match up with us. So their five would have been against our two.
No, we'd be with a four.
No, you've just told me that Forrest and Tierney are wing backs.
Yeah, but the thing is they're not tied to the touchline, Brian. They can come inside. I mean, they can be flexible. They're footballers. The whole thing that you said there about you would need to shout instructions to Armstrong and Forrest, they're professional footballers. They should know at the drop of a hat what to do.
I don't know what to do if I'm Forrest. Just told me I'm a wing-back with defensive duties who's got to get to the byline and sit in the middle of the park.
No, not in the middle of the park.
No, that's
right.
What you're
on the right-hand side.
See, in the last 5 minutes, in your description of Forrest coming on, you've said, I would ask him to be a wing-back to get up to the byline, but remind him he's got defensive duties, right? Then when we got to the midfield, you'd have said, well, the midfield would have been a four of Forrest, Beaton, Johansson and Tierney.
See, when you're doing it 10 men, they have to do a wee bit more. So Forrest, Tierney and Armstrong would have been the vital cogs in the wheel, because you would say to Forrest, you've got a hard shift in that right-hand flank. Tierney's got a hard shift in the left-hand flank. It means a lot of running. and you say to Armstrong, you've got a lot of running as well, because when we get forward, you need to make sure you support Griffiths. But when we're defending, you need to get goal side. And that's not too much to ask. That's simple, basic, tactical football. When you're down to 10 men, asking players to be a wee bit flexible and do a wee bit more.
And play in three positions. I don't understand why you needed to go, and based on what you want the players to do, I don't understand why you needed to put Lustig back then.
The whole thing there, you said it yourself, when we've got two centre-backs and two wing-backs, as you call them, and a 4-2-3-1, we're getting the two centre-backs are too exposed. And if you gave yourself a wee insurance policy having three central defenders, it might just have made the difference on the day. But the other thing I want to say as well is, although I've been a critic of Ronnie playing 4-2-3-1, it isn't the system that I'm against. From the very beginning, I've always said, he doesn't have the players to play in that system. Now, for example, in a 4-2-3-1, you look at the real good teams that play 4-2-3-1, you need to have two holding ball-winning midfield players. And Beaton and Johansson were all over the place on Sunday. Johansson, in particular, just can't play that role. It's just not him.
Apart from when he plays for Norway.
Now, maybe he's more disciplined when he plays for Norway. I don't know what goes on there, right? But all I'm saying is, when he plays for Celtic as a holding midfield player, he is so undisciplined in terms that he just chases the ball. And to be a good holding midfield player, you look back to when we had Lennon and Lambert. Not the greatest individual players, but they were very disciplined. They sat in their position and they protected the back four at all costs. They kept possession of the ball and they tackled and intercepted when they had to. And I thought Beaton and Johansson, I'm sorely disappointed in their displays on Sunday. Because they've got much more in them than what they showed.
I mean, first of all, what I would say is, really what you've said there is why you prefer a three at the back. It's not specifically he should have changed the three at the back. It's why you preferred the three at the back in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, although I've been, like, obviously on a bit of the wind-up there, I personally prefer a three at the back as well. I mean, see, when we've been at our best under Ronnie's system, it's been one of the two holding midfield players has dropped back so that when our two centre-halves are spread really wide, one of the holding midfield players drop back and virtually makes it a three.
Well, Charlie Mulgrew's good at that, Scott Brown's done it, and Beaton is capable of doing it. So, you know, I agree with you there that it almost makes it three centre-backs when the two full-backs push up the field. And you know, it means that you're less exposed.
I tell you, you mentioned Beaton there, and I'm jumping ahead to a bit in the game, but you know, one of the things that I could not fathom yesterday was why people booed at Beaton getting substituted. Because see, 10 minutes before Beaton gets substituted, my brother and I, we were discussing the predictability of what was unfolding in front of us. Predictability for not just under Ronnie Dyler, but every time Celtic aren't playing well at Hampden, how the game goes. And I said, he needs to get Beaton off because he's anonymous. And the guy further along was having a go at Johansson. My brother said, what about Johansson? And I said, well, the reason that guy's having a go at Johansson is because of how many mistakes Johansson's making. But the reason Johansson is making mistake, or the reason why he's noticing Johansson's mistakes, is because he's on the ball to make the mistakes. The reason he's not I don't think he's noticing Beaton's mistakes is because Beaton's not even on the ball to make the mistakes. You know, if Johansson, you know, say he was, every second pass was slack, it still meant that every other pass was correct, and it was particularly at the third goal. I'd said this, and then the third goal, the ball bounced around Beaton, who should have closed it down and stopped it, didn't. They then go up the park and score. Now, I've not seen it since, but there's a Hearts fan that I work with who told me that Beaton was also at fault, in addition to the foul on Gordon, Beaton was also at fault for the second goal.
I mean, Beaton just seemed to have won the game yesterday, and I thought Johansson was pretty poor as well. But as we were saying there, if you're going to play the 4-2-3-1 for Nation, then you need to have two very disciplined holding midfield players. And again, I know that we kid on a wee bit. here and there, but the 4-2-3-1 has annoyed me from the beginning because he doesn't have the players to play it. Not because he plays that system. See, if he was playing the system and it was going like clockwork, I'd be perfectly happy with that. But from the beginning, he's come in the door. Another thing I wanted to say there that just came into my mind, do you know who was unlucky yesterday? Callum McGregor was unlucky to get taken off.
Yeah.
Because I thought, like, personally, I would have taken Mackay Stephen off. That's just a personal thing to me. Because I think if you're doing a dog fight with 10 men, then I don't think...
He scored the goal, and he was doing all right to that point. The problem was when you get that type of sending off, you're going to take off an attacking player to bring on the defender to substitute. And at only 14 minutes into the game, at that point, I don't think any of the forward players deserve to get taken off. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, as I said there, if Armstrong or Mackay Stephen had been taken off, I think that might have been more beneficial, because Armstrong, I like Armstrong, but he had a shocker yesterday. Nothing came off him. You know, every time he cut inside or even down the left wing, by his standards, he was pretty poor.
So what did you make of their second goal?
Well, the second goal, let's face it, it's Gordon gets, I was going to say, get obstructed. He didn't get obstructed, he got held, which is even worse. And the guy had two hands on him, although I'm in the Celtic end watching that, I didn't have a clue what was going on until I saw it on TV last night. And Craig Thompson has apparently got a good view. So, you know, we can regard ourselves as being unlucky in that respect. And then I heard Willie Miller on Radio Scotland yesterday saying, "Aye, but Celtic still didn't defend it well." That's totally irrelevant, because if your goalkeeper gets fouled, it doesn't matter how, if you defend it good or you defend it bad, it's a foul on the goalkeeper, regardless.
That's one of my most loathed thing that I hear pundits say. If Celtic lose a game and we say there was a foul or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh Keevans used to say this. I remember after the game at Ibrox when Kenny Clarke didn't give the penalty for the assassination attempt on Neil Lennon, and people were phoning up, and Hugh Keevans would say, this is what really annoys me, Hugh Keevans would say, Celtic should be better than having to rely on referees' decisions. That is the most utterly bonkers. Well, any sane human being to analyse that, who knows anything about sport, to analyse that statement for a second would know that that's just bonkers. Because what you're actually saying is Celtic should win every game by minimum of two goals to take account for a bad decision.
Well, the other thing that you may as well say is Celtic should be playing with one hand tied behind their back. If they're going to constantly have to put up with bad decisions, but just take it in the chin. So, no, I don't get that either, and I think that's just a stick to beat us at times, you know. If they're going to have a go at us, then that's one way that they can do it, they're saying it. The other thing as well is, and I'm guilty of this as well, is saying there's 30 teams in the past with 10 men that would roll their sleeves up and get stuck in. And there is, that's not to say, I don't like comparing different eras, because, you know, it isn't fair. The game was different in the 70s and 80s to where it is now. And but I just felt yesterday there was a wee, you know, Celtic teams in trouble and in adversity, generally speaking, can rise to the occasion. And I was going out of Hampden yesterday, and I met a guy I know, and he was being semi-humorous, but he was making a fair point as well. And he turned around and he said, see, if you were in a fight, how many of these Celtic players would you like at your back? And I sort of laughed, because I knew what he meant. Now, if you think back to not so long ago, you'd guys like Johan Mjalby and Chris Sutton and Neil Lennon and Bobo Baldy, big intimidating guys, good footballers, but they had a physique, they had a presence. And you look at that Celtic team now, and you know, there isn't any leaders, there isn't any, certainly we're okay, a lot of fair weather players, when we're playing well and we're winning 2 and 3 nothing, they all look good. But you know, sometimes you need to roll your sleeves up and you need to get dirty and you need to get tore in. And I think in that team, that they're sadly lacking in that department.
Well, there was a predictability about us. There was a predictability actually about Craig Thompson yesterday. I mean, see, when the second goal went in, my brother and I were discussing that Craig Thompson would have known from Craig Gordon's reaction that Craig Gordon's not the type of person who would normally react in that way, run up the park chasing the referee for a goal.
Mm-hmm.
So we both agreed that Craig Thompson would have then thought, I think I've made a mistake. We both agreed that if there was a slightest chance of a penalty to Celtic, we'd get it to try and compensate us for him mucking up over the goal, which we did. We got a soft penalty. And the other thing my brother pointed out, he reminded me of, remember when we get beat by Inverness in mm-hmm. a cup semi at Hampden a couple of years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing niggly wee fouls.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we went behind, Craig Thompson started picking them up for their niggly wee fouls.
Mm-hmm.
But not booking them. So all he was doing was wasting our mm-hmm. time.
One thing that was really noticeable yesterday is, and that was Inverness as well, I hesitate to say they're a dirty team, but they're a cynical team. And what happened yesterday was, three or four times in the second half, we had a break on. No goal scoring opportunity of any manner of means, but James Forrest, remember when James Forrest had broke out from his own penalty area, and he had a big space to run into, and you thought, this could be, you know, like, Forrest has got pace, something could be on here. And a guy just literally chopped him down. He made no attempt to play the ball. And it happened as well that there was another Celtic player, I think it was Johansson, get elbowed in the back of the neck. And it was just total, everything was done to break Celtic up, to stop them getting any fluency. And at the top of my head, I think Ross County had five bookings in the second half yesterday. Inverness are guilty of that as well. They'll stick the boot in as well when it suits them. And the thing is, they get away with it because referees let them away with it constantly. And they're sticky as well because the number 8 does the first one, the number 10 does the next one, the number 2, they make sure that it's never the same guy twice in a row that can get called for it.
And that's what we were talking about in terms of they just do enough. I mean, I think, what was that? I was looking at the stats prior to coming on here, and they committed something like three fouls for every one foul Celtic committed. And it's not fouls, and this was the point about the Inverness thing. It's not that they commit fouls that necessitate bookings, but they do lots of niggly wee things. Celtic fans start to get really annoyed. The Celtic players start to get annoyed, and eventually Craig Thompson says to himself, I'm going to show that I'm doing something about it, but they're not quite bookable offences. So he keeps pulling players over and talking to them. And you're sitting there thinking, look, either book them or don't. But all you're doing by talking to them is just wasting our time. The only thing we got wrong was we predicted that in about the 90th or 91st minute, a Ross County player would commit his second bookable offence, get a red card, and then people would say, see, both teams were down to 10 men and you still lost.
Well, they're having so many bookings, that was certainly crossed my mind as well, because I thought, you know, one of them might end up making another foul and getting sent off as well. But, I mean, even when we get the penalty, and Griffiths, had he scored that, there was a guy next to me who I'd never met before, and the two of us sort of, you know, after the disappointment of the penalty miss, we sort of looked at each other and we were shaking our heads, and he said to me, if we'd have got that goal, the fans up here would have been sucking that ball into the net. He says, I'm convinced we'd have got an equaliser. It would have been manic, desperate stuff, he says. It wouldn't have been easy in the eye, but we would have hit them with absolutely the kitchen sink, because, you know, their backs would have been up, the crowd would have got noisy, and they would have got animated. Ross County would have begun to get nervous, and probably maybe even with 11 men, that they might have tried to hold on to their lead and defend what they had. But Griffiths, you know, he had a great season, but that was a big disappointment when he missed
that. Again, that was one of these ones where you're sitting there and you're thinking, he's going to hit this straight to keep it and we're not going to score. You just got that sense. But I agree with you. See the point. My brother and I, we were keep talking about my brother and I, but it was just at the game we were discussing. It reminded me a bit. See when we lost to Ross County 5-6 years ago in that cup semi.
Yeah, 2-0. Mm-hmm.
When they went to 2-0, and it was 89 minutes or something like that. They went to 2-0. It was close to the end.
Yep.
And I remember
Stephen Craig scored the second one. That's all I remember.
We had a chance when we went up the park, but no Celtic players really went for it. You know, the ball was cut into the middle and it was half-hearted attempts. And I remember saying to my brother, because there was like 3 or 4 minutes of injury time plus, there was maybe 5 minutes of play left in the game. And I remember at that game thinking, if we score, we might still get to extra time out of this.
Mm.
Because they're playing Celtic at Hampden. We've suddenly pulled a goal back. They would have just chucked everybody into their box to defend. And once that's happening, anything can go on. And the disappointment for me leaving that game was, I believed at 2-0 down that we could still get something out of the game. But the Celtic players didn't. And see your point, I believed when that penalty was given, exactly what you just said, if we make it 3-2, I reckon we'll make it 3 each.
It would have been like the Alamo in the last 10 minutes, but it would have given us such a big lift, and it was such a disappointment when he missed it. And when he missed it, I think we all knew, as much as we're fanatics and we'll cheer him at the end, I think we all knew at that point that was the end of the day.
So you touched on something there which also leads to a transfer window and about the lack of leaders on the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I would refer to it as people who appear to have strong personalities.
Yeah.
On the park. The Danish guy looks like he might be a self-confident person.
The new guy looks more of a speaker than a centre-back, because he was taking the ball off Craig Gordon and spreading it about. Certainly in the first half, he was spreading the ball down Tierney's wing, a couple of cracking passes. So he doesn't look the tallest, so I don't think he's going to be an orthodox centre-back.
He's 6'1", apparently.
Well, he did, dare I say, he didn't look big.
No, because you know, instead of where we were, he was warming up right in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good. He was warming up in front of us and then came over to some of the guys in the disabled section, was saying, shaking their hands and saying hello to them. Because we were commenting that it was only 10 minutes into the game and he was warming up. Mm-hmm. And then Effie gets sent off, and my brother turned to me, maybe he knew something we didn't. Because he was ready, because he'd been warming up for 10 minutes. Nobody else had.
He certainly looks like...
He looks solid.
Yeah, firstly, I mean, it's always difficult to make a first impression, but the first impressions that I got was that he is good with the ball at his feet and he's a good passer. And the centre-backs that we've had recently have all been they were meant to be big, intimidating guys that attack the ball. So he'll be, and he's left-footed as well, so you're maybe hoping that he'll go to the left and Simunovic, when he comes in, will play in the right, and we can take it for there.
The other thing, remember on our last podcast, I'd made reference to some things reminding me of Tony Mowbray and some things reminding me of John Barnes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that reminded me of Tony Mowbray was, I felt under Mowbray that we were trying too quickly to get to a certain type of young player squad. And that was to the detriment of the manager. And I have felt we have gone over the top. I understand the principle of getting young players, trying to get young Scottish players and have a good core of young Scottish players and young players who develop with our team, and we can sell one once a summer and make it, to self-fund more. I understand the concept, but I just feel we've gone too far in the project's concept. And I know from things I've heard that's Ronnie Dyler's complaint, that he's been getting too many young, they're going to come good players.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, and I'm not being critical here of Ronnie Dyler. I mean a genuine point. Do you believe for a minute that Ronnie Dyler is buying new players?
No, and I think I've told you that. I know the system at Celtic Park for the players. Ronnie Dial, or the manager, identifies the type of player he wants. It's then Park's job to go out and get a selection of players that you think Celtic can get.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know exactly the system under Dial, but I know what it was under Lennon. It was Park, Parker and Lennon were the three people mm-hmm. Who then said, if all three of them, and Park would say, this is the player, this is what it'll cost in wages, this is what it'll cost in transfer fees, and there would maybe be three or four for each position. If a player had all three of them saying, yep, I think he's the type of player and he's worth that money, then Peter Lawwell's job was then to go and negotiate the deal.
Mm-hmm.
If it was only two out of three, then one of the two had to be the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just the way modern football works. Players cost so much money, no football team gives the football manager free rein to go out and buy players. That's the way modern football works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one discussion I keep having with this, there's someone I know who keeps saying, aye, but Boyata was Ronnie Dial's player in terms of blaming who signed. My counter to that, what is always, yes, but I know that it wouldn't have just been Boyata. It would have been a choice of Boyata, X or Y. So you can't criticise him for signing Boyata until you know who X or Y are. Well, I know that one of X and Y was Danny Wilson. So his options were Danny Wilson, Boyata, and I don't know who the third one was. So mm-hmm. given another Danny Wilson-esque player, then yes, in theory, Boyata was Ronnie Dial's choice. But it was his choice out of a potential three, which include one of the other ones being Danny Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do know that Ronnie Dial is not happy and hasn't been happy with the focus on the point being that we would all make, which is that's all well and good that in 5 years' time Celtic are going to have this core of mid 20-year-old players who've been around the team and know what they're doing, but I need mm-hmm. to win trophies and still be in a job for it to benefit me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the Danish guy, because he's 24 and a bit older. And that's why Kazim Richards, because he's a bit older, have been brought in.
Mm-hmm.
That he's looking for, that he's really pressed and really pushed for getting a bit more experience and not just a whole host of, a bit more experience of people with strong personalities and not just a whole host of projects.
Well, that brings us on to Ronnie then, and I have to ask you, and I'm not being, I'm not pulling your chain here or anything like that, make a case for keeping Ronnie at the end of the season. And I know it's difficult to tell now, because hopefully we'll win the league in the Scottish Cup, and everybody will be dead happy and carry on merrily through the summer. But it does have to be said that where I was yesterday, there was a wee, in fact, there was quite a big swell of, he's
locked
it, to be frank.
Well, my case for Ronnie Dial would be the case that I keep making. We're scoring goals more than we're scoring on average in any season post-Rangers. We are, despite some of the errors, we are conceding fewer goals. Not as few as last season, but last season was a 100-year record in the league. So we're conceding fewer goals and scoring more goals than seasons post-Rangers. My defence of Ronnie Dial in terms of the tools he's been given a job to do in terms of, if I was going to have, this is where I would argue that the board have let Ronnie Dial down by, as I've said earlier, I understand the principle of what the concept behind our signing policy is. We need to focus more on players that we can, Scottish players, to keep the wage bill down in line with reduced income in Scotland. We can't compete even with the Championship. The Championship's the fifth richest league in the world, so we can't compete with that. You know, Gary Hooper and Aidan McGeady are both going to Sheffield Wednesday for £35,000-£40,000 a week, when our top wage is £20,000-£25,000 a week. So we can't compete with that. So we need to try and focus on developing younger players. And I just think we've gone too far
that way. So Ronnie Dyer has been let down by last season. He has Van Dijk, who's unhappy for the first 3 months that Ronnie Dyer is in charge, because Van Dijk thought he was going to get to leave in the summer and didn't. And a loanee from Man City, who, despite the fact that by the time he left, everybody thought he was a great centre-half, actually was still bedding in at Celtic in his first 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then once he gets a good, secured centre-half pairing, both of those are lost and gone. One of them was only a loanee anyway, and the other one, we knew we were going to be selling them in the summer. So Ronnie Dyer had to start the season with two brand new centre-halves, one of which he didn't get in until after we were out of the Champions League. Because his other support centre-half is Ambrose, who is a... Ambrose is a strange one. Ambrose was somebody who... Oh, he's playing in the African Cup of Nations and we've got this Juventus game coming up. Oh, there was not any debate that... Oh, it's a real tough decision for Lenny as to whether to bring him back for the Juventus game or not.
Mm-hmm.
See, since that Juventus game, the downward spiral of Effie Ambrose has been remarkable.
I'll tell you a funny thing. I think Ambrose is cut out to be a holding midfield player. See, the system, if you're going to play that 4-2-3-1, I would like to see Ambrose in there, in front of the back four, protecting the back four, because he's actually a good passer of the ball. He's comfortable with the ball at his feet. So he wouldn't look out of place in midfield the way some defenders do. And he's mobile as well. He's certainly got pace. I mean, he's probably one of the fastest guys in the team. But you need to take him away for being the last man or marking in the penalty area. Where anything that requires concentration and discipline, I think Ambrose is going to let you down.
But that's the strange thing. We didn't think that about Ambrose prior to the Juventus game.
I know, but there were some games Lennon did play in the midfield. I remember he played one of his first games was against St Johnstone in the League Cup at Parkhead. They won 5-0, and he was man of the match. He had a terrific game in midfield. Although, having said that, Lennon did tend to play him at centre-back.
He played him at centre-back didn't do what he does now. And I'm not saying it's under Ronnie Dyer, because it was happening under Neil Lennon after that Juventus game.
Well, who would have been his centre-back partner in the days? Would it have been Mulgrew?
Kelvin Wilson. Was it not Kelvin Wilson and Ambrose had a great game against Barcelona when we lost the goal in the final minute?
The one I remember, I think, I'm hoping right in saying this, was, let me think, Kelvin Wilson and Ambrose had a great game in Spartak Moscow and they won 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
They were outstanding. So, there we go.
It's a strange one. One of the other simple things is, I think we'd be setting a terrible precedent about our club if we sacked a manager who wins the double.
Uh-huh. But do you understand why some of us, and I count myself in this, have got reservations about giving them another go in that Champions League? Because what happens in late August, when we lose to, off the top of my head...
Well, it doesn't matter who, if we lose and we're out of the Champions League.
They play Malmo again, right?
Yeah.
And we get beat by Malmo over two legs. Even if it's close, even if it's away goals, then he's really a lame duck at that point, because no one will have any faith in him anymore, no matter what he does.
Do you know? I actually think if we didn't make the Champions League, I think he would go.
In August. But do you not think that would be more ludicrous to let them go in August when the season started and you bring a manager in? It would not make more sense to get shot him in the summer and give the new manager at least 8 or 9 weeks to get used to the team?
Yeah, but say we win our next couple of games and you want to fire a manager who's on track to win the double.
Well, I'm not talking about sacking him. My outlook is... I don't want any knee-jerk reactions at the moment. Even if they get beat by Aberdeen, perish the thought. I don't think that's an option. But what I'm serious is, at the end of the season, there has to be a rational outlook of, are we progressing here the way that we hope to? And can we trust him with another Champions League campaign?
But then what you're doing is... you are putting the new manager in the same position that Ronnie Dyer was in his first Champions League season.
Yeah, Yeah.
His first competitive game for Celtic is going to be the most important one of his career.
That's right, that's right.
And the other aspect is, let's talk from the realistic position of the current Celtic policy and not, but they shouldn't do that. Let's just talk realistically about what we will do. See if we get rid of Ronnie Dyer.
Uh-huh.
I'm not asking for an individual's name. What's the CV going to look like of the guy who replaces Ronnie Dyer?
Well, that's part of the reason why I'm willing to stick with Ronnie Dyer, because I don't have any faith in the current board to go out and get anybody better than Ronnie Dyer. And if anything, we could end up with a manager who's even worse than Ronnie. And we've been there before, because, you know, that there's been, we didn't all want with him, but there was quite a majority had enough of Gordon Strachan in 2009, and that was the end for wee Gordo. If it ended up with Tony Mowbray, and it was indescribable how bad we became that season. So I actually think that Ronnie will get the, it's a case of being damned by faint praise. I think he will get to carry on to the end of the season. But I really do think, as a club, as a support, then we have to have a wee, take a wee step back and say, you know, what do we do now?
But as I say, if you look at, we will look for someone who's got very similar CV to what Ronnie had, i.e. a youngish manager who's got a good domestic track record somewhere, but not really got much European experience, just simply from the very practical perspective of somebody who's got good European Champions League experience and a good European and a good domestic track record will not be in Scotland, will not be in England, who'll be in the continent, and we'll not be able to afford them.
I know, it's a tough one.
So I'm not saying you don't do something just because the other option's not great. The point I'm making is, we'll be bringing someone in with a very similar CV.
I know. But even although I don't believe the club would necessarily get anybody any better than them, there comes a point, when would be the tipping point for you? When would you say enough's enough? Because I think if you don't win the league, then that's it.
Well, I really don't like, your point about people wanting him to go, not to sound like a boring old fart, right? But actually, I was sitting around people. There are people who say, I'm not going back until he's going or that's happening. There were people sitting around about me yesterday that, as I was listening to the vitriol directed at Celtic players and the Celtic manager coming from their mouths, I actually thought to myself, I don't want to sit next to you pricks. You arseholes are the type of people that makes me not want to go to the game. I have been to see Celtic since October 1974, and I have seen some dross and some utter shit that puts this stuff in the shade. And what I have rarely experienced has been the vitriol directed to Celtic people. See, when it came to, I remember being at Perth in Liam Brady's last game.
That was the other night.
And driving back down the road, being really disappointed, thinking, if I was Liam Brady, I'd go, because these players are not playing for me, and that's a shame. Because right up to the very last second, I wanted Liam Brady to turn things around and become a great Celtic manager. When Tommy Burns left, I remember thinking, it's a real shame, but I think actually we're going to have to replace Tommy Burns. And I can't remember this. I remember having a conversation with one of my mates saying, you know, I hate to say this, but, and I'd calculated up must win games, you know, League Cup semis, Cup semis, Cup finals, and games that if we needed to beat Rangers to have a chance of winning the league. And whatever it was, say it was something like 40 must-win, you know, 40 games that would have changed his...
Yeah.
He won one of them, and it was the Airdrie Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to my mate, you know, see, for the good of everybody, but I really wish it wasn't happening, Tommy Burns probably needs to go.
and then Tony Mowbray, despite the fact that you knew it wasn't working, I remember being relieved when we lost 4 goals to St Mirren, because I thought, Tony Mowbray can't survive that. And at least it's painless and he gets it over and done with quicker, rather than we just have to eke it out to the end of the season and we all know he's going to get this, he's going to leave in the summer and he's not good enough. But it was disappointment and sadness. See this anger and vitriol that I saw yesterday at Hampden towards Celtic. People call, you know, I've read online, people calling Johansson. See, if Johansson's not playing well, it's because he's not playing well. It's not because he hates you sitting in the south stand or the north stand or wherever you're sitting. He's not deliberately not playing well just to piss you off. And having a go at him and call him and I see you next Tuesday, it's only so that we can don't have to put explicit on the podcast.
Yep.
At a game. Really? Take a look in the mirror yourself. See if you were sitting at work and having a bad day at work and customers started coming in and calling you that. Would you say, do you know what? Thanks for calling me. I'll see you next Tuesday. I'm going to work damn hard from now on. Or would you want to punch the guy in the face? You know, I don't get the mentality of football fans who don't think through. I mean, granted, I understand passions run high and you get annoyed at a player doing something and you shout instantly at the player. But the vitriol that I saw yesterday from some people at Hampden, actually, I'm quite happy with the people around me where I sit. I know the intricacies and some guys sort of piss you off. And sometimes when you go to Hampden, you're sitting with people you don't normally sit around. And I actually thought, because quite a few people like around you were telling Ronnie to F off. And I thought, do you know what? I don't know if I will go to the next game at Hampden because I don't want to sit next to people like this.
You know,
and sorry, my point about not sounding like an old, bone old fart.
Yeah, I know, but
we didn't behave like that towards managers and players in the past. That's not the Celtic way.
They probably did, and maybe even they sitting standing next to them. But I think back in the old days, the terraces, you're more likely to stand with your friends and less likely to hear people like that. Whereas maybe when it's a stand and everybody's sitting, you are at the mercy of your ticket number as to who you are going to be in close proximity to. So my point in that would be that I was in the back of the Celtic Inn yesterday and my boy was there and there was some choice language, shall we say, aimed at Ronnie's direction. But I think it was knee-jerk stuff. I don't think it's anything long last. It's my take when Celtic get beat is as soon as the final whistle goes, just to bolt for the exits. Isn't it a shouting ball and remonstrate to people and argue with the guy next to me or whatever that is? I'm just so damn disappointed. I want to go home. And as soon as the final whistle went yesterday, me and Junior were off. But there are people who, for maybe 10 or 20 seconds, they'll let rip and get it out of their system and that's it, finished. Doesn't necessarily make them bad people. Everybody's different.
So, what are your thoughts on the transfer window? Because the one thing I forgot, I had a big debate with a guy on Twitter about the benefits of signing a £12 million Man City player on loan for 18 months. So, what's your thought of the transfer window?
I really don't know, because I don't have a clue about the boy from Man City. I haven't even heard of him. And when I heard that it cost £12 million, it makes me I just shake my head, because to think that a club like Man City can sign a guy for £12 million and not play him. You know, it used to be £12 million. I mean, for us, £12 million you could basically buy a full team.
Yeah.
And then you've got this one wonder kid, if you like, who's coming up to us. But the good thing is, he is going to be here for 18 months. I think the mistake we made with Dyer, I'm sorry, with
Denier,
was that we basically gave him the option to both have a good season and get off your map to a perceived better league, shall we say. And at least if this boy comes in and does really, really well, then it means that we've got him for the qualifiers in the Champions League. And see, to be fair, if he is a winger, we're maybe, I know we've got wide players, I know Mackay Stephen can play wide and Forrest can play wide, but I don't think we've got anybody who has got that extra oomph in them, you know, the me and you were talking in one of the previous podcasts, and I made the point, what we really need is a player that can get you off your seat. A personality player, somebody that the fans can identify with. You know, with Hendrick and with Lubo and even Nakamura and Boric and people like that. And if everything goes to plan, you know, this boy apparently is full of tricks and full of skill. So, all being well, maybe he's what we'd be looking for. But as of the other ones, the Kazim Richard thing is just, I don't know, that just strikes me as desperation. I had a wee look at his career record. He's played 400 games and he scored 50 goals, just over 50 goals for a striker. And again, I read somewhere else that he's more comfortable playing in a wide position. And that's not what we're needing. We don't need wide players. We need somebody that can come in for Griffiths.
No, but you see, I was wondering if... Many times I've heard Ronnie Dyler say that his preferred backup system is 4-3-3. And I did wonder with the Man City guy and with Kazim Richards, whether what he's trying to do is he's trying to bring in players that allows him to play a 4-3-3.
I don't see Ronnie changing his... I think he's too...
That's from his own lips.
Maybe. But he has players at the moment that I feel could be more effective in 4-3-3. But 4-3-3 in the modern day isn't the days where you're a three-man forward line, a Davy Proven, Charlie Nicholas and Frank McGarvey. 4-3-3 is essentially a glorified 4-5-1 because you're two wide players. Ajax did this for years to wonderful effect. They had two wide players who, when they were defending, tucked in to make it a 4-5-1, and when they were attacking, it was a 4-3-3. But it takes a special kind of wide player to play that, and you need to have you need to be very, very disciplined. And I'm not sure we've got the personnel that would allow for that.
So, we've got a massive game in many ways.
It's a bigger game than what it should have been if it had played Bercard's right and won the semi-final. They've put pressure on themselves
It gets back to the point, I mean, the reaction of the people that we were just talking about at the Cup semi gets back to the point we made in two podcasts ago, I think Ronnie Dyler could win the next 40 games in a row. And then if the 41st game was a Champions League game, a Rangers game, a Cup game or a home game, and he lost it, people would be shouting for him to get sacked. Strachan got to that point. He could win 30 games in a row, and the 31st game, people would call for him to be sacked if he lost it.
You're being a wee bit harsh there, but he has been unlucky in many ways, because the Champions League is a holy grail for us. And frankly, if you told me that we would qualify for the Champions League and get knocked out of the Scottish Cup in the third round and the League Cup in the third round, I would bite your hand off, because in comparison, the Scottish Cup and the League Cup bear any significance. The reason why he's under so much pressure is he went into the final qualifying game 2 years in a row, into the second leg with a lead, and he couldn't motivate or inspire the team to get over the finishing line. The first one was against Maribor at Celtic Park, and we spoke about this before, where we only needed enough in each draw, and he didn't know whether to twist or stick that night. He didn't know whether to play defensively and take enough in each, or go out attack and win 3-0 or 3-1 or whatever it is. And we get caught with a sucker punch at the end. And then even when we went to Malmo and made it hard for ourselves by losing that late goal, we did still have a lead. You know, we still had the advantage. And then we went over to Malmo, and that was a shocking night, because, you know, in terms of motivation and inspiration, that we were sadly lacking that night. So the reason why he's under pressure is those two qualifiers have really... If he'd have won one of them, even one of them, I think he'd have been a manager here for about the next 4 or 5 years. Because it would have given him time, and I think what the Champions League did is it's cut down on his time available, because people are now questioning, even at this stage in January or February, whatever you want to call it, is he the man in July and August that we need to inspire us and to get us through into the promised land of the Champions League.
So, what's the score going to be against Aberdeen? Well, first of all, what's your team going to be?
That's a hard one. I'm going to go on the basis of Simonovic is unfit. So it's
Before the game, listening to Radio Scotland when I was walking to the ground, Ronnie Dyla said Simonovic has got a knee problem and will be out for a few weeks.
Right, but well, that being the case, I wouldn't play 4-2-3-1, but I'm going to give you 4-2-3-1 because that's what he plays. And I think he will go along the usual lines. I think it's going to be Gordon in goals, Lustig. I think it'll need to be Boyata and the new guy.
Yep.
At centre-back.
Yep.
And Tierney at left-back. He's two holding midfield players. It's probably going to be Beaton and Johansson. And I think he'll go for... I think he'll play Forrest this time. Because I think Armstrong had a bit of a struggle there, mate. So I think it'll be Forrest, McGregor and Mackay Stephen with Griffiths up front. As I said, it wouldn't be my choice.
Well, what would your choice of team be?
My choice of team, I mean, we spoke earlier, I would have a 4-2-3-1. I would have a 3-5-2.
Uh-huh.
And I would definitely have two up front. But the only problem I've got at the moment is I don't think they've got two to play up front. Because, well, Chiefsy's away. And Carroll and Cole, to my dying day, I will never understand why we bought Carroll and Cole. He's not fit. He's past his best. We're paying him $10,000 a week, apparently. And okay, he may take the boys in training and, you know, pass on his experience and maybe try and set an example of him to be a good professional. But I don't know. It's something that was a weird one for me.
Okay, so what's the score going to be? So you wouldn't have Kazim Richards or so the only one of our new boys that you'd have would be what's his face?
I don't. I wouldn't play the boy for Man City. I think it's too early for him, and I would also have doubts about his fitness if he's not playing a lot of games. And I certainly wouldn't play Kazim Richards. The whole thing is, if you're only going to play one striker, it's going to be Griffiths.
Right, okay.
So Kazim Richards would probably get a place on the bench at best.
Okay, and the score, what's the score going to be?
I'm going to be bold. I think we'll win 2-0.
2-0?
Yep.
Brown's back.
Brown is back, but I'm not sure if he's got 90 minutes in the tawdry. The my feeling about bringing Brown back too soon as he gets injured again and you're back to square one.
But Brown is the leader who changes the leader on the Brown's the leader in the team. He's the only leader on the park in the squad that we've got.
He is. Even to have him back in the dressing room, stripped and ready to go as a substitute might be a good thing.
But so who's going to score the two goals?
Oh, God knows who. Griffiths probably. Okay. Hopefully.
One other aside, you were talking about the size of the pitch, and this took me, I was surprised at this. Hampden is the biggest it can be, 115 by 75 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Celtic Park, from the stats I can see, is 105 by 68 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, that doesn't sound that much, but it means there's 1,500 square yards of a difference between the two parks.
Definitely.
So only 10 yards up and down doesn't seem, or 10 yards up and down and 7 yards side to side, but it's 1,500 square yards of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it will make a difference the way players play. Anyway, you're 2-0 with Griffiths' prediction. Hopefully you're right. I got a similar text recently that I got this time last year from a Rangers fan when he sent me a text saying, going to just put Aberdeen out of their misery and stop them thinking they've got a chance of winning the league and just run away with it from this point onwards.
I know.
And this point last season, we were not 9 points ahead of Rangers, so hopefully we can win Wednesday night and go 9 points clear and then run on to win the league.
Well, the other thing you have to say as well is that traditionally, this is a time of year where good teams that do win the leagues come into their own. You know, once you get into February, March, April, you need to go in there. If you've got any desire to win the league title, then that's when you really need to hit form. So hopefully that'll do us.
Hopefully. Anyway, I will say, St Anthony, it's been good to chat with you, and hopefully things start to improve. And I'll speak to you soon.
Yep. Pleasure, Harry.
Cheers.
Soon.
So I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the heated part in the middle, and then St Anthony and I decide to calm it down. Anyway, we've got the big game against Aberdeen coming up midweek, and as I said in the podcast, I have no desire to ever be ultra critical of the Celtic players or Celtic manager, apart from in the heat of the moment in a game, but apart from that, no desire. So hopefully we thump Aberdeen on Wednesday night. There's a few Celtic FC Foundation events being announced. There's the golf day where they're still raising numbers, which I think they're most of the way there to teams, but if you're interested, it's June the 23rd. There is the zip wire, which is going diagonally across Celtic Park. I'll be doing that, trying to persuade my wife to do it. One of my mates is doing it, and a couple of my mates didn't realise Tony Hamilton and at Lefty Boy, Mark Cameron, they're shitebags. St Anthony's also a shitebag, he's not doing it. And one of my colleagues is also a shite bag. I never realised there was so many shite bags. Anyway, so there is the zip wire and loads of other stuff that Celtic FC Foundation are doing, putting things, doing things the Celtic way. Go online and see what you can do. See what you can help. But enough of me. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. This is me, Harry Brady, saying things could be worse. Good night and God bless. Good night.
Sweet reunion, Jamaica and Spain. We're like how we were again. I'm in the tub. You're on the seats. Lick your lips while I soak my feet. Then you notice little carpet burns. My stomach drops and my guts churn. You shrug and it's the worst to truly stick the knife in first. I cheated myself like I knew I would. I told you I was troubled. You know that I'm no good. I cheated myself like I knew I would. I told you I was troubled.